This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We've all learned a lot about the symptoms of the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, and how to do our best to stay away from it and not to spread it. But with so many societal restrictions in place, keeping many of us in our homes for most of every day, is there another concern emerging? We begin today with a discussion on the pandemic and what this social distancing, if prolonged, could do to our mental health. Joining Cincinnati Edition on the phone is Dr. Kate Charge. She's a professor of psychology at UC Health with specialties in post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. Dr. Charge, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we want you, listening at home or in your car or wherever you might be right now, to give us a call. Tell us how you're coping or what your concerns are, or what questions you might have. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, and you can email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. And as always, find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets as we continue the program today. And Dr. Chard, I want to start with a tweet that I just read before I came in, because it really struck me as relevant to what we're talking about. I won't name this user, mainly because an actual name was not used in this person's handle, so I can't give a shout out. But it says, quote, "I am an extrovert. I am a hugger. I am struggling mentally. I want a hug and have no one to provide that hug. It's an odd time to live on this planet in this universe." He goes on to say, "The hardest part about social distancing is all the relationships that I cultivate on a daily basis with people I just happen to pass by." And then he says, "We are going to get through this. Everything will be fine. But after 11 days of this, I'm certainly feeling the fatigue of my extroversion." Dr. Chard, what does a feeling like that mean to you?
Well, I think there's a shift that's going on in society. I think a lot of the extroverts that are out there, and I would consider myself one as well, are having to acknowledge how difficult it's probably been for introverts to navigate a very external society all these years. And so we have a lot of empathy, I think, for people who maybe are saying, wow, I get to stay home and I only have to contact people over chat or emails or phone. This feels wonderful to me. And so being able to understand that there are multiple ways that people like and feel comfortable interacting with one another. And now we have to pay attention to those of us who are extroverts who like being out, like having that social moment, like having that face-to-face contact, that we need to find a new normal. And that doesn't mean there isn't one. It just means that we need to shift and we need to change.
It seems that society, in a way, has been preparing for this in some ways, I suppose. We have grown distant in the way we communicate. Social media is certainly a way that most of us will keep in contact throughout a day with people without ever setting foot in the same room with them, without ever being in the same country sometimes. And they might be some of the most regular interactions that we have. Do you think that the technological shift in the way that we interact with one another is helping us adapt at all? Or is there something on a more human level here that we're just not ready for at all?
I absolutely agree with you that having the technology where it is has probably made this more palpable and acceptable for so many people, because you do have that ability to text. You have the ability to get into chat groups on different platforms with people that you may not even know, or, like you said, may be in another country. And so there is a distancing in that you don't have that, you know, within 6 feet chat with people that perhaps you're used to. But we know that communication is at an all-time high in the world right now, where you used to wait, you know, 9 hours for an email or weeks for a letter to get across to a different continent. Now, literally, it's not even half a second before you can be talking to someone else about their experience or reading about their thoughts and feelings. And so I think it's just about maybe reframing the context for ourselves. Maybe those of us who are used to contacting people on a face-to-face basis every day, what we need to think about is we can contact. We know that teenagers talk to each other incessantly, but they'll do it sitting right next to each other in text messages, in Snapchat. And so it's the idea of, it's not that they're not talking, it's just that they're doing it a different way. And can we make use of that, or those who still want the face-to-face, use some of these other platforms out there, and not to sell any particular company, but, you know, Skype and FaceTime and Zoom, use those to find a way to talk to one another if we need that face contact.
Yeah, it is one of those signs of the 2010s and now the 2020s of a young group of friends getting together and sitting around together so that they can all have their phones out talking to other people who aren't present. So it's an interesting dynamic to watch here. And in that vein, we did get an email from someone who referred to herself as a concerned parent, didn't want us to use her name. She wants to know, and this might not be something that you can answer, this seems to be health related, but just to put out the societal concern here, says, should we allow our daughter to see her boyfriend, a junior in high school, in the current environment? Both families currently have at least one high-risk member at home.
You know, I understand how any parent could be pulled here, because a lot of times we know that our children have desires and needs that maybe are not in their best interest, whether it be your four-year-old who wants to have cookies for lunch or whether it be your teenager who wants to go and see their boyfriend. We know their prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that makes executive decisions, isn't fully developed, and it doesn't allow them to think completely and totally in their best interest. And we see this in these teenagers and even young 20-something-year-olds making some maybe questionable decisions about being on the beach and having parties with their friends, because there is that sense of invincibility. And they have that in part just due to the brain not being fully developed. And so at those points in time, we as parents do need to step in and kind of be that sense of reason and say, I know this stinks. I know you want to do this. I know this is painful. Can we find another way to get that need met? Like, maybe we can choose a special treat you'll get after dinner. Or maybe, you know what, we'll set up a private place for you to be able to FaceTime with your boyfriend for, you know, 25 minutes, an hour, whatever it is you're needing. Have a date night. Maybe you two can sit and watch the same movie together at the same time and laugh at all the jokes together while using some type of screen device to watch the same movie privately in your room. You know, where you can still have that sense of just being together, but not being in the same room. Because it is important to follow the medical advice. It's important to follow the state advice that we not spend time together, because even if we feel healthy, we know we can be a spreader. And I think all of us would feel horrible if that impacted someone's parent or grandparent.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We want to hear from you on how you're coping with any mental aspect of this. Do you feel strained, drained? Do you have some tips for others to maybe occupy their time? I'm joined by Dr. Kate Chard, a professor of psychology at UC Health. And Dr. Chard, you have studied trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder for the Veterans Administration. How has that assisted you with the lens through which you're seeing this current situation?
Well, I think understanding how stress can impact people is really important here, because I think, you know, a lot of people think about what our veterans go through, our first responders go through, anyone who's been through a traumatic event. These are things that are outside the range of normal, and we know that they create changes in the individual. But we also know that on a different scale, stress over time can impact people. And so being able just to understand that this is stressful, and I always tell people, make it okay for you to be anxious. It is okay to say, I'm anxious and I'm nervous and I'm upset and I need to be able to say that. And I think just giving yourself permission to feel that is really, really important. But then there are some steps that we can all take to actually make ourselves feel a little bit better, even when we're in a time of crisis or a time of stress. And I think taking some of the things that we've learned about first responders, about veterans, that can help decrease stress when they're in stressful environments, we can do that as civilians every day as well.
Dr. Chard, you had moments ago just talked about some of the brain development that takes place in teenagers and how they may be coping or dealing with or struggling with this current social situation compared to some of us who are older than that. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the different age groups and how we might all process this differently, or how we're physiologically prepared or designed to handle isolation.
Absolutely. So we know that children are actually much more resilient than we think they are. And so the beauty of having children is they do tend to think they're invincible. And so one thing I tell parents to do is don't worry about making a big experience for your kid every day. Sometimes it's just those small moments in time that create memories for them. And so I've seen wonderful parents do things like creating schedules for their kids where, you know, maybe today we're going to take a trip. We're going to take a trip to Paris. And they took grocery bags and created an Eiffel Tower on the side of the wall in this tiny little apartment. And then that day they made something fun, like she had flour and made crepes at home. And they weren't beautiful by her own statement, but they were something, an experience for this child. And so realizing they may be anxious, and being able to talk to your child about what they're hearing and validate it and not just dismiss it and say, oh, don't worry about it. But the kids are alarmingly resistant to stress and being able to handle it the majority of the time, but they're going to read off of you. And so the more anxious you are and the more concerned you are, the more the child is going to be, because they are worried about how mom or dad is feeling. And then as kids develop, of course, they become more aware of society, and that's when we start to see things conflicting, where some of our teenagers are going to be overly anxious about what's happening, very worried about what's happening in society, and others are going to have that sense of, but it won't affect me, so I don't have to worry about it. And then as we move into our 20s and move further in adulthood, you know, people are not the same. There are some people who are, like I said, they're introverts by nature, they're not worriers by nature, and this is just what it is, and it's something they're rolling with, and there's something they're going to take every single day. And then there are others who this is really significantly impacting. They may have a loved one at home with a compromised medical condition. They may themselves have a medical condition. Many of our healthcare workers are in the trenches every day dealing with this. So I think just being able to understand that what you're feeling may not be what your best friend is feeling or your next-door neighbor is feeling, and being able to just listen and support people as we're going through this, and understand that sometimes just having someone who can let you vent, or someone who understands that today was a tough day, but tomorrow may not be, and helping you get through it.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We'll go to the phones now. We have Trina on the line. Hi, Trina. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I have PTSD from military sexual trauma. And when they announced that the police was not going to respond to assaults or breaking and entering, I'm dealing with a lot of fear for my personal safety.
Okay, Trina, I tell you what, we'll take that and form that into a question that I think is specific to what you're talking about. We'll hang up and we'll let Dr. Chard answer that. So Dr. Chard, Trina's calling. She's experienced PTSD from what she said was a sexual assault in the military. And I imagine if you've gone through something as traumatic as that and you're at home in isolation and away from people, there's probably a pretty severe level of anxiety.
Absolutely. And I think one thing to be aware of is, you know, the police are doing their best, but they also have to take care of the officers and the other first responders, because if we lose them, we'll have no one. But I think they clarified that this was only if there wasn't someone who was there who could possibly be hurting someone. So I absolutely understand that anyone who's been through a sexual assault in the military or otherwise wants to make sure that there is someone out there who will respond if they are in a threat situation, if someone is in their home, if someone is making threats against them. And I don't think that's what was intended at all, that there will absolutely be people there. But what we all have to do is make sure we're practicing our safety. You know, we are all in this moment, whether it be safety of making sure someone's not coming in the house, safe distancing, safe health care, doing the things that we need to do to keep ourselves healthy and moving forward.
I'm personally fortunate to, for the first time in my life, be considered essential at a workplace. So they bring me in here every day to host this show along with my producer, Elise, and our technical director, Josh, while some of my colleagues here at the station have to stay home. So I'm not fully experiencing this, but I know that vices come into play. And goodness knows I'm reading a lot of posts and maybe feeling it a little bit myself about people who are eating too much right now, basically joking about one continuous meal that starts early in the morning and goes throughout the day. But then, of course, there are also more serious vices that might do more than increase your waistline. You know, there are people who have struggled with alcohol or drugs, and now they're in this weird position where they don't have a routine and maybe they can't keep up with their coping mechanisms to make sure that they're not turning to those old habits. I'm wondering what type of practical advice you have for people who are experiencing that.
I think this is one of the most important things we could possibly talk about, which is structure and routine. No matter what, you've got to have a routine. We as humans just, we thrive on it. We do better on it. We know our children do better on it. And the amount of routine can vary from person to person or family to family. But even if you're living by yourself in a very small space, have a routine that has you getting up and going to bed about the same time, you know, eating meals about the same time, unless you're eating a large meal. Obviously, you're not going to want to keep eating. But stick to the original habits that you had before that were actually working for you. And then even use your calendar. Use your reminders, just like you did before, where you had certain times of day that you either switched meetings or got on phone calls. Create those reminders for yourself where you change things. Don't stay on the screens all day long. That's not helpful. Now, obviously, if you're FaceTiming with friends, that's great, but there does need to be a time when you're not on the screen. And find a way to exercise. And I love these beautiful posts about people running a marathon on their balcony, a tiny little square of space without moving, or doing push-ups or sit-ups or burpees or whatever you can do based on where you are physically in your life. But there are so many free groups that are now giving away. If you want to get back on those screens, you can get back on the screen and watch a video. You can download printed information about workouts that people are giving away for free. But make sure that exercise, if you can't get out and do a social distanced walk or run, make sure exercise is built into every single day. We know it helps people sleep better. We know it reduces anxiety. And then I would also say have goals. You know, if you're going to be stuck at home, if at all possible, have goals. So maybe if you've got kids, you all decide to, you know, clean up the playroom. Or if you don't have kids, maybe you decide that this is the right time for you to tackle cleaning that closet that's been driving you nuts for 2 years. But every single day should have a structure and a goal, so that you actually feel like you're moving towards something, you're accomplishing something, and it gets you away from that worrying all the time, and it keeps your body centered and focused, it keeps your mind centered and focused, and the more you can have that sense of routine of knowing what you're going to do, it'll actually make it easier to bounce back once you move back into your regular life after all of this moves through.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're joined today by Dr. Kate Shard, a professor of psychology at UC Health. She specializes in post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, and we are grateful for Dr. Shard's time. You know, at some of these press conferences, you even hear government officials. I've heard Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear say this multiple times. You need to turn off the news from time to time. You need to get the information that's pertinent at this hour and get your updates, but you've got to turn off the news. And I think some of us, even in the news business, are being told in our internal meetings to find ways to unplug from all this. But it's such a strange situation in that it's global in its nature. And then there are aspects that have to be addressed at a national level, at a state level, and then at a local level. And all of these conferences are staggered out over time. And, you know, if you're unplugged for a moment, you miss a lot. And these days, each day seems like a whole week. What is your advice for the way people should consume coronavirus news right now as a way to maintain their healthy sanity?
Well, I think that's good advice that you're being given, which is find a time when you are unplugged. Because, you know when you're living in your apartment or your house or your dwelling that it's not going to matter if you miss 15 minutes. You know, it's not going to matter if you even miss 30 minutes or potentially even an hour. Things are moving quickly, but they won't be moving that quickly. And so giving yourself permission to, you know, read a book or to play a game with your kids or to work out for an hour and then come back to it. But find a couple of news sources that tend to be your favorites. Because if you end up just surfing on Facebook, you know, all of us can get lost for hours on any of these websites where we're bouncing from thing to thing to thing. And what we find is we're reading the same thing like 6-7 times just with a subtle spin. So find those that you trust. Find those that you find to be most helpful on the way you like to digest your news. Check in with those if you need to a couple of times a day. But then at some point, it's okay to give yourself permission to say, you know, I don't need to know the latest numbers. Maybe I want to listen to the governor's press conference, or maybe I want to listen to this newscast at 5 or at 10, but I don't need to have it every 15 minutes. And as long as I check in at my set times with my routine, the rest of the time I can be free to focus on other things that are still going to be important to me. Because when this is done, and you come out of this seclusion that you've been in, and hopefully, you know, everyone on this phone is healthy and okay and untouched in a major way, but we're all going to look back on this hopefully in 6 months to a year, and we're going to still have that same apartment, that same house, those same kids, and we're going to want to come out as unscathed as we can. And the best way to do that is to keep physically healthy, psychologically healthy, and be able to bounce back. And the best ways we can do that are, like you said, keeping the routine, not investing too much in eating and drinking and other things like that, and then keeping our, you know, friends circled around us in whatever way we feel comfortable doing that, with the internet, with text, with FaceTime.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join us. Allison is on the line. Hi, Allison. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. I am so excited that I have found something great to make you feel good that I can share with everyone. What I've come up with is, I'm an older person and I live alone, but I've decided I am just not going to get depressed about this. And I've come up with a plan to email, first of all, I find what I call my feel-good song of the day. And I'm having so much fun looking for great old songs with great lyrics and a nice dance beat, or an upbeat song, that then I share it. I listen to it. I look at the video of the old artist who made it. And then I share that online with my friends, and they share one with me.
Well,
and
Allison, so, let me ask you, what's today's upbeat song of the day?
Today's upbeat song was You Make Me So Very Happy, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh, great choice.
Great song. Great song.
Got
what
another
a great
one,
idea.
Good Vibrations. Thank you. And it's really keeping me upbeat, and it's really fun to look for songs. Music makes us all happy. It touches everyone, and I can dance around by myself. But I just think it would be great for families, too, because kids, everybody could get involved, and so you could add something new to your daily routine, which is like a little dance fest with everybody that's home with you.
And it's exercise, too, Alex. Everyone can dance. Even someone who's in a chair can dance with their hands, hopefully, or with their feet, and we can all get involved. I love that, and I love that you're reaching it out to other people, because one of the main points I was going to talk about is, don't forget your friends who maybe aren't reaching out, who maybe are more isolated. And you can check in on people even if you can't knock on their door. And I love that you're actually making that attempt to reach other people and have them reach back to you.
Allison, thank you so much for the call. That's a great tip. And I have to confess, I'm an at-home dancer too. You know, you just find a little bit of euphoria, even for a moment, when you find that song. I would say that my today's feel-good song, for those of you looking for an option, I love the Lido Shuffle by Boz Scaggs. It's a great little jam to dance around your kitchen too. 513-419-7100 is the number to join our conversation. We're talking with Dr. Kate Chard, a professor of psychology at UC Health, with specialties in post-traumatic stress disorder. And you just mentioned, Dr. Chard, per Allison's suggestion in that phone call, that you should check in on folks. And we did make a point early in this conversation to note how we're connected technologically. But of course, the aging population may not be so connected. And they also happen to be most vulnerable, according to reports, to the symptoms and the deadliness of the novel coronavirus that we have spreading across the globe. What is the advice for the way people should check in on those who are older, who may be in nursing homes or maybe living alone right now?
Well, I know that a lot of folks have some type of smartphone or even phone in general. So just being able to call them is a first step. Text if you can. So being able just to reach out and saying, I'm here. You know, within the VA, we have moved a great number of our patients onto teletherapy. And you'd be surprised with the number of people who, you know, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but I tell you, my veterans are here to prove you wrong, right? Because these men and women are actively using their phones, their iPads, their desktops, laptops, in order to still have therapy sessions from home. And so reminding people that you can make this very simple, it's very easy to use some of the apps out there in order to still have that visual contact if you want to move past just the telephone. And sometimes just literally that one quick chat a day, that text a day, whatever it takes. But I love that nursing homes are taking iPads into the patient's room so they can still have conversations with their family. And in fact, some family members who say it's difficult to get across town to check on grandma in her facility, now that they're using the iPads, I'm actually able to talk to her more often. So I absolutely love what this new telehealth platform is doing for us in terms of allowing us to connect with people that perhaps we didn't connect with that much before.
I want to cite an article recently published in The Atlantic with the headline, "The Coronavirus Could Cause a Social Recession." And one line from it that I'd like to quote Yet the pandemic could trigger something else, a social recession, a fraying of social bonds that further unravel the longer we go without human interaction. Is that something that people in your field are worried about? The longer that we stay in this situation, the harder it might be to rebuild our sense of normalcy as it relates to human interaction?
You know, I think there are a lot of people who've made some really interesting conjectures about this. But I think the thing we have to remember is just because kids have been connecting on social media for quite a number of years now doesn't mean it's wrong. And just as when the telephone came along, people were very startled by that kind of communication. And then when we had email come along, people were startled. And then FaceTime, I think just because it's something that's not familiar to us or is unknown to us doesn't mean it's bad. And so I don't see that teenagers communicate less. And when I've been looking at the research on the young adults, it looks like they have about the same amount, if not more, communication. It's just different. And so I think what we all maybe need to do is be prepared for a new normal, that there may be people who use the forms of technology actually as a way of communicating and connecting as we come out of this more. And in fact, research has shown for therapy, for example, video therapy is equally as good as in-person therapy. Study after study has shown that. So maybe it's just a matter of all of us might need to shift at some parts in our life to a new sense of normal. Not that it's wrong or that it's bad. It's just a different way of connecting. And then many of us, of course, with our jobs, will go back to the same way it was.
Dr. Kate Chard from UC Health, thank you so much for this conversation today. We so appreciate it and hope to talk again soon.
You're welcome. Stay safe.
You too. Up next, how Kroger is making adjustments to accommodate the surge in demand for groceries during this coronavirus crisis. And later, we've got a preview of a newly produced radio play premiering tonight and produced right here at WVXU. And we also want you to share your story with us. What's life like under this pandemic? Go to Talk to Us on the WVXU app to record a brief message or give us a call after the show and record your message at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.